long time.
All right. Good morning, folks. Are you having a good time? Or is it too early in the day? All right, let me quickly introduce myself. My name is Sam. I've actually been in the Active Directory team for a little over 16 years now, starting from 98, through the origins of Active Directory in Windows 2000. I primarily drive Active Directory Federation services, as well as work with Andreas out here to focus on how to onboard customers to Azure Active Directory and make it simple. And so on to Andreas for a quick introduction.
All right, so I'm obviously Andreas. And so I'm the synchronization guy, and I've been doing all the different flavors, MMS, MIS, ILM, FIM, for about 12 years now. So everything identity synchronization related, that's me.
OK, so today, our talk is essentially focused on how do you really establish a integrated directory, or what we like to call a common identity plane across whatever you use within your organization. So what we are going to focus today on is talk a little about why do we want this common identity plane. We're going to then walk our way through some aspects of the installation associated with establishing a single identity plane that spans your directory across your on-premises as well as the cloud. And then we're going to start focusing a little more on details on synchronization, on sign-in capabilities, and briefly talk a little bit about our upcoming features and some additional capabilities we're adding soon. So let's get started. Now, when we really focus on why do we need that identity plane, people essentially want a single identity that they can access organization resources, whether they are on-premises or in the cloud. And they don't want the ability of saying that, I use one account here, and I use another account here, and this is my third application, and I use yet another account. And that is quite painful for end users to, A, remember their credentials, as well as the experience is quite clunky as a result of it. Now, what we see in terms of thinking about that identity plane is that the user is at the center of whether you're accessing resources up in the cloud, like Microsoft services such as Office 365, or the thousands of SaaS applications available through Azure Active Directory, or your on-premises applications, whether they are standard files or web applications, they have a consistent identity that they can use to sign in and access these resources. Now, similarly, a key element is of what we do within the Active Directory team is not just focus about that end user, but it's also about enabling an application ecosystem that can span this common identity control plane. We have at least one session by Vittorio who'll talk a little more about this. We're not going to focus on this aspect in this session. Okay, so let's dive in a little bit about what this looks like. On the left side of the slide is your standard enterprise. You have different systems out there, applications, that consume identities. What you may also be using is an identity management system such as FIM or Microsoft Identity Manager to be able to build that standard identity plane within your enterprise today. So that gives you a notion of when an end user is hired, it starts in the HR system, it moves into Active Directory, it perhaps may even move into another application identity store based on what you have within your enterprise. Now, on the right side of the equation, the slide is essentially the new paradigm of cloud services, which provide high-scale, more efficient, more cost-effective ways in which people can access resources. Whether this be is Office 365 here, which gives you a series between Exchange, your mail, SharePoint and OneDrive access, as well as communication through Link. Those are some of our key. But there are many more services within Microsoft, including Azure, CRM, as well as thousands of SaaS applications that we also support within Azure Active Directory. Now, what we are going to be focusing on is in the middle layer. How do we bridge those to establish that common identity plane? From our perspective, we are using the term of Azure Active Directory Connect, which is also a tool for us that establishes that bridge and sets up that common identity plane for you. There are two key components of this bridge. One is synchronization, which Andreas is the expert of, and he'll get into more details of what that comprises, and one is about sign-in. Now, let me quickly kind of explain what that means. Now, within Azure Active Directory, what we drive is essentially to enable a common identity repository that's consistent with your on-premises and your cloud. Now, you may ask, why do I need that up in the cloud? There are many reasons for that, and let me give you a very simple example. Imagine that we are using Exchange Online and we need an address book. The address book is driven out of having access to all the identities so that you can see an easy listing when you're trying to send email. That's one example of why synchronization is an essential part to offer the best experiences for end users. The second aspect is sign-in. Now, there are different ways in which we can do sign-in, and we'll cover that in more detail later. Now, what's the world today? Why are we focused a lot on this? We've had Office 365, and let me quickly make a point. Every Office 365 customer has an Azure Active Directory tenant. It just happens to be behind the scenes that we have, where it is the Azure Active Directory drives the millions of customers that we actually already have for Office 365. And I think Jason probably mentioned in the keynote, we serve about 18 billion authentications every week. And this is predominantly Office 365 and the growing number of services that we have. However, and we've had a number of numerous customers on board to Azure Active Directory. There are a set of problems out there today. And one aspect of what Andreas and I will be talking about are all the improvements and enhancements we're making in that area to continue to simplify. Let's give a brief glimpse into the problem space. Now, today, within the synchronization, people may be wondering, we have multiple tools. We have DirSync, we have AADSync. What do I use? These are the types of problems that people have. Similarly, many customers have multiple forests. What do I need to go do? Do I use FIM? Do I use Azure AD Sync out here? And for anyone who's gone through our documentation, they'll look at that and say, hey, there's at least about 40 pages that you might have to read before you feel comfortable enough to get started. And that's a scary proposition for many people. And for sign-in, do I use Password Sync or ADFS? We'll talk a little bit more detail about this in later as well. And similarly, setting up Active Directory Federation Services, which is a core Windows Server role, is really hard. Or people might say, hey, I'm trying to move to the cloud. I don't want additional infrastructure on premises to essentially get the value, because my whole intent of moving to the cloud is to remove the number of servers that I have on premises. And finally, and if this clicker works, I'm going to get through the clickers. Finally, hey, I'm already using FIM. Can I use FIM or Microsoft Identity Manager to connect me up to the cloud? And for those of you who may be dedicated, Office 365 dedicated customers may have yet another sync solution that drives the synchronization capabilities. How do I think about that? So, as part of addressing all of this, you probably saw at the keynote demo yesterday, we have what's called as Azure Active Directory Connect. This is essentially the think of this as a one-shop experience where people can connect their existing directories up to Azure Active Directory to establish that single identity plane, and as a result, and make it really easy to actually go do that. Now, a few key things that I'm going to focus on is that we have a notion of express settings. in about 4 to 6 clicks, you can be connected up to the cloud, and it's as easy as that. And another core principle with which how we've approached this is that I mentioned the problem about documentation. The whole goal is that the tool will itself help you through the learning process in terms of, hey, as you are making decisions, you essentially have the ability to understand how do you make the decision, what is that decision point about. So those are key principles that we abide to within the tool. And similarly, the express settings essentially is your smallest footprint. It's just one box. You can co-locate it with a domain controller if you want to. And that pretty much establishes the way you connect up to the cloud, and it's extremely quick. And the same within Express Settings, we also have the notion where we call it simple sign-on, where it's the same password as what you use in Active Directory, you use up in the cloud as well, where the end user doesn't know it's very different, and it feels that, hey, that's my business account that I use. Now, to demo that and continue on, I'm going to hand over to Andreas.
Great, thank you. All right, so this is the Azure Directory Connect tool, or just Connect is going to talk about it. So you might have seen this at the keynote already, but this today we're going to do it a lot slower and actually talk about what's actually happening under the covers. One other thing I'm going to mention, what I'm going to present today is actually the next version of Connect. So if you go to connectmicrosoft.com, you can actually find this already today as a preview. The preview we have out right now is only for single forest. We actually ran a demo of that already yesterday on the Office 365 identity session. But what I'll be running today is the next release. So don't be surprised that if you go download this, what I'm presenting will look different. All right, of course, I'm going to agree to all the terms. And this will install all the prerequisites. Sign-in assistant is basically the thing we need to be able to log in remotely to Azure Active Directory. We will need, obviously, the sync engine because we are installing everything on this box. So this Connect tool, we are running on the box where we want the sync engine, and then we can do federation, can be on other boxes, obviously. So let's install the sync engine, and I'm going to log in to my Azure Active Directory. This has to be a global admin. So that's going to be admin. Oops. All right, that worked fine. So what is it you're saying? So Express Settings, Sam just discussed, is really the appliance. So today, you basically go and download DirSync, and DirSync just say, okay, this is the configuration we will work for 80% of our customers. To be honest, most of our customers today are small and medium-sized companies. They have less than 2,000 employees, something like that. So for most customers, the Express Settings is actually the correct way to do this, which basically is, yep, you have one forest, easy, and yes, you do want to do password synchronization. And that is actually a recommendation. Most customers today are actually using password synchronization over ADFS. So this is actually what we're going to do. So this is basically the same as a DirSync experience today. So let's do Express. And then I'm going to need my credentials. Just as in DirSync, this is going to be your enterprise admin credentials. And that's basically it. So basically what will happen now when I click install is that it's actually going to install the sync engine, it's doing all the configuration, and we're up and running. That's basically it. All right, so that was the easy part, the Express settings. So let's continue and look at the not so Express settings. And I'm just going to reset my machine. So I actually can run this again. All right. The other not so express is obviously the customized version of it. Because in many cases, hey, you actually do want to customize at least something, or your large customer, the express setting just won't work for you. In that case, you can still use the same wizard, and we can use the advanced path or the customized part, path in that way. And there's a bunch of things we can do in this mode. We can do multiple forests, so if I have one forest or two forests or 19 forests, I can configure them all in one go. I can choose my sign-in options. Do I really want to use password synchronization or want to use ADFS? I'm going to show that as well. All the different kinds of filtering and all the other common configurations. So in the wizard, we are trying to solve 80% of the most common things you want to configure. And even if you're part of the 20%, we want to get to configuration that at least is 80% of what you need to do. Those of you who have been working with like Forefront Data Dimension, for example, know you always started with a blank templates and was nothing there. And you always started over from the beginning every time. But what we're trying to do here is give you a configuration you can start working on and start modifying rather than starting from scratch all over again. So let's actually try this and see how this works. All right, this is the same machine. I just did a reset, so I actually could run the wizard again. And I'm going to agree to the license terms just another time. I still need to log on. It's on Microsoft.com. And this time I'm going to select the customize option. So the first thing we want to know, okay, just to be able to understand in a wizard, do you want us to configure federation or not? How do I want to do it? And obviously, this time, I want everything in the wizard. So I'm going to select the single sign-on option here. And it's giving me information. OK, for federation, this is the infrastructure we are going to need.
And one more thing that I wanted to add here was that we have this notion of the question mark that you show up here. So whenever you need to make a decision, you know, you can hover around that. And typically, we'll kind of provide something about 2 to 3 sentences. And if you need to learn more, there'll usually be a learn more link that's around the decision, which will take us to the documentation focused on that contextual decision point that you have. And that you'll see that as a common pattern throughout the tool.
Yeah. So rather than reading all the 100 pages up front, you see links from the wizard. OK, where do I go now to actually find more information about this one? And obviously, if you pick the password sign-on option, for example, you won't see any links to federation. You don't have to read things that are not relevant for your options. So let's go down this path. And as you notice, we got a lot more pages here in the wizard. We have a few different things we can add. So I can either add Active Directory, one or more forests. But it's also possible to add other things, like an open LDAP server or something else that's running LDAP. And eventually, we'll be able to connect to basically anything, at least anything that the FIM today can connect to. So I'm going to actually pick Active Directory forest here. And you actually see we actually have started to populate the different forests we have discovered through the trust relationship. So in my environment, I actually have two forests, one called Contoso.com and one Prosware. In case you don't have trust to all your forests, which is absolutely a possibility, well, this is a free text field. So you can just type in the forest name in our case, and then we just use DNS to find that forest. In my case, I'm actually going to use the two forests that I have configured. So I'm going to enter my username. OK, so the difference here is this is actually going to be the account I want to use to connect to Active Directory. So very common complaint we got from Dursing was, hey, you need enterprise admin credentials. But guess what? In many of the customers using the customized path, they are also the same people that they will not give me an enterprise admin. So what we're doing instead is just document, hey, go talk to your AD admin, ask him to create a service account for you, and here's the permissions you need. If the only thing you want to use ADFS, Actually, the only permission you need is domain user. You don't need any other permission. So usually when I'm running this demo internally, I actually use my Microsoft account and connect to our core forest, and it works just fine. And I can actually import all what, millions and millions of objects. So that's a default setting. You'll see a little bit later when it comes to the options, there will be other options that actually will require permission, more permissions, but I'll get back to that. So what I'm going to enter here is actually the account that I'm going to use to connect to Active Directory. Now, I'm lazy, so I'm actually going to use administrator. You should not do that. I'm going to add one directory. And I'm going to pick my other forest. And there's a trust. I can actually use the same account. And add. And as you see, I can continue adding forests, as many as I want. 1, 2, 19, it doesn't matter. Up to 1,000 or so, it's whenever it started to be impractical. OK, so I talked about a bunch of different optional features here. So Exchange Hybrid is something you probably have seen from the old Dursing days. And a hybrid exchange will basically take some attributes from Exchange Online and write them back to on-prem. And this basically allows me to move mailboxes, like 1,000 mailboxes every day or so, rather than do the big bang. So when you're moving from on-prem Exchange to Exchange Online, there are a few different ways to do that. One is the big bang option. You just move everything over a weekend, you're done. If you have more than 1,000 mailboxes, that probably isn't a good idea. In that case, you will enable Exchange Hybrid, which will allow you to actually move them on a slower pace. So I'm going to enable that. I'm also going to enable filtering. That actually allows me to control which attributes are going up to the cloud. And when I click that, you'll see I suddenly got a few more pages here. So we'll come back to this later. Password writeback is going to allow me, it's a premium feature. It allows me to do self-service password reset in the cloud. And when the user enters the password in the cloud, actually come back to on-prem, verify the password policy against my on-prem Active Directory, and then do reset of the password in my on-prem Active Directory. So if I don't want to deploy like Forefront Identity Manager for self-service password reset, we actually have that as a service as well. This is currently preview already. So it's something you can actually go and try. And then we have a bunch of write-back options. I'm going to just select everything. Devices. So you probably have heard something about devices on this conference and MDM in the cloud. And guess what? When you create a device in the cloud, you also want it back on-prem, so you can use it for conditional access. So this will actually allow me to take a device in the cloud and write it back to on-prem Active Directory so I can use it for other scenarios. Groups is the next thing that is coming. It allows me to do group management in the cloud. And you've probably seen that in a number of sessions, both in Office 365, but also in Active Directory Premium in general. I can do my group management in the cloud, and that will take the membership that's changed and write the group back to on-premises. And finally, users, which we're actually going to show also tomorrow, will actually allow me to like have an HR system such as Workday, create the user in Azure Active Directory, and then write back the user back to on-prem and create the account, and et cetera. So all these things allows me to really build this hybrid identity world where objects can originate either from the cloud or from on-prem, and I can move them back and forth as I want to. I'm going to pick everything here. Now comes the most complex part of the session. So let me actually move back to my PowerPoint to explain what this is. So I selected more than one forest. I selected two, actually. So what we need to know now, OK, how was this actually configured in your environment? When you said you had two forests, like in my case, how do you want this to look like in Azure Active Directory? The first option is basically, hey, my two forests are completely separate. Even if you find two users with the same email address as an error case, I never want you to join the objects at all in the sync engine. So I will actually get all the objects up to Azure Active Directory as in from each voice. It's like I installed two DIRCs in parallel, which isn't supported, by the way. The next option that is common is you have something like GalSync. So after merge acquisition, you have a sync engine. It's taking all users in one forest, represent them as contacts in a different forest. Well, guess what? In that case, I don't want both users and contacts to appear. Well, secondly, it won't work because you get an error because they will have the same email address. So what I need to do in that case is make sure that if I find two objects with the same mail attribute or value of the mail attribute, I want it to be represented only once, basically converge everything and send only one copy. Another very common solution is, or deployment topology is an account resource forest. That is, I have my enabled users in 102 or 19 different account forests, and then I have one resource forest where I have Exchange and Link where I find a disabled user. And in that case, what Exchange will do, it will take the object SID from the account forest and copy it into the MS Exchange master account SID. So if those two values are the same, I want to join them again, and what's going to happen is going to take all the information that's related to account, like the UPN, et cetera, from the account forest, and we'll take from the resource forest, we'll find all the exchange-related attributes, we get one object that we can send up to the cloud. Okay, so now when we know what this is trying to tell us in the wizard, let us actually go through this. So in my case, I actually had multiple directories, so I select that option. And it may say, okay, now you know what I'm supposed to do here. I can do mail attribute, my account resource forest variation. I can also do something else like same account name or my own attribute. So for example, at Microsoft, we have many forests, 7, 6, something like that. And what we do is actually have one of the extension attributes. So there's no way we will be able to find it more than on one extension, but we have our employee ID. So in the Microsoft case, we actually use a custom attribute in this wizard. In this case, I'm actually going to do the same, and I'm just going to pick same account name. So in this case, what I've done is basically, if I find two objects with the same account name, I'm going to assume it's the same object. All right. Next thing here, what is it we're trying to ask you for here? So this is the source anchor and the user principal name. So source anchor is particularly important for multi-forest customers. The source anchor is, by definition, the attribute which is immutable during the lifetime of the object. If you install DIRCSync, it is object GUID. We assume that, well, if you only have one forest, you probably never move these users anyways, and hopefully not move them between domains either. So we use object GUID as a source anchor. But if you have multiple forests and you're moving your users around, you need to pick something else, something that will move with the user when they move between forests, which is, again, at Microsoft, we use the employee ID in one of the extension attributes. But you might pick something else. So this is something you need to decide up front. What is it that is immutable? And this is also part of the claim for federation if you choose to do federation. So if you change this from the default object GUID, you also need to go to ADFS and change the claim rule. Otherwise, you won't be able to sign in. In my case, I'm actually going to use same account name. Same account name is probably not the best attribute to pick, to be honest. But it works for my demo. It makes it really, really easy. You would probably pick something like employee ID. Because one thing to notice is that this is also case sensitive. So if you're having a mismatch of upper and lower case, you might run into interesting behaviors. So next thing is the user principal name. And this actually allows me to pick which attribute holds the login for the user. So by default, we use the user principal name, and that is what the users will use to log in to Exchange Online and the other Office 365 services. But it could be that you have a user principal name that makes absolutely no sense. It could be non-routable, it ends with a .local, or it could be a format that the users have no idea what the user principal name is. So in this case, I actually can pick something else, like the mail attribute. And this actually will now synchronize the mail attribute to Office 365 in the Azure Active Directory. So it's a mail address the users will use for logging. And again, this is linked to Federation. So if you use Federation, obviously you want to use the same thing in your claim again. I said earlier that in my options, I said, hey, I want to select which attributes I want to synchronize. So by default, if you know DirtSync, we take like 150 attributes or so and synchronize them all up to the cloud. But it could be I'm actually a little bit sensitive of I don't really want to synchronize everything. I only want a subset of my attributes. So in that case, I can actually say, hey, I actually do not want everything. I actually do not want to synchronize all the link attributes, all five of them, or whatever it is. And with this, those attributes will not be synchronized. I can also continue here and look at other attributes. It might be there are a few attributes I'm very sensitive. I don't want to synchronize extension attributes. I don't want to synchronize a home telephone number or other attributes that I'm sensitive about. In that case, you can start unselecting particular attributes, like I'm going to say, I don't want description. OK, with great flexibility also comes great power and great responsibility. You need to apply a little bit of sense here. So if you have Exchange, well, you should not unselect your proxy addresses, for example, because Exchange won't be too happy in that case. So when you do this, don't unselect everything. Just apply some bit of logic and some common sense. And that's basically what we're doing for the sync engine. So even though I'm showing this as Azure Active Directory Connect right now, if you download Azure Active Directory Sync, you will see exactly the same wizard experience, but you'll just get the synchronization options. You don't have to wait until Connect is available to be able to get to what I just showed you right now. And I have a question.
I got a statement from Microsoft due to some one of the problems that we were having is that we couldn't get proxy addresses over. And they said that one of the AAD sync versions was a little deformed.
Ah, OK. So there was a comment here that the AAD sync version that was released in September had an issue and it didn't synchronize the proxy address attribute. Luckily for you, Monday night, I actually pushed a new version of AD Sync. And with that, I also have password hash synchronization for multi-forest. So if you're looking for a multi-forest password hash synchronization, it's actually available today. And that also fixes that issue with proxy addresses. So just go download the latest version of AD Sync, and that will be fixed. All right, so that was synchronization. So over to Sam.
OK, so before I jump into the tool again, so what we saw was essentially that 80% case of really taking a complex environment and trying to simplify it by a set of key questions that we asked in terms of how you want to go. It focused on, hey, adding multiple forests. It also focused on how do you control the set of data, essentially, that is moved up to the cloud. Because we've heard a lot of feedback from customers that they want more flexibility and controls. And as a result, we kind of added that functionality directly into the wizard. Now, before I jump more into the tool to focus on the sign-in option and the setup of ADFS, Active Directory Federation Services has been there as a Windows Server role since a while, in fact, since 2003 R2. We released ADFS 2.0, which was on Windows 2008 and 2008 R2 as an out-of-box Windows component. And we continue to evolve that in 2012. We made significant enhancements, really targeting a lot to our cloud services up in 2012 R2. However, Active Directory Federation Services is a general purpose product. Not only is it used for Office 365, it can be used in other places. So as a result, we have lots of bells and whistles in terms of doing that. But for an Azure Active Directory and Office 365 installation, you don't need most of those. And what we found from customers was that it was fairly confusing in terms of how people looked at it from the perspective of setting up for Office 365 and Azure Active Directory. So what we focused on was that really streamlining the deployment process, really focused on making it really easy to get onboarded for Azure Active Directory and establishing that as an end-to-end scenario. And I'm going to walk our way through that. So now that we finished sync, now this is the place where I can either create an entire new farm of multiple servers in one go. How do we do this? Now this is where 2012 R2 really comes into place. We invested a lot in remote deployment to kind of make sure that we can push those changes remotely and install that. All we need at that point in time is that your WinRM interfaces, your for management, for remote management is enabled, and we essentially can, once you set up the machine, we set up the entire configuration in terms of installing the role and configuring the role. So in this case, I'm going to select a new farm. And the key portion is when you're signing in, there's a lot of authentication requests that flow back on premises. We secure that all through HTTPS connections. So as a result, we need a SSL certificate for your Active Directory Federation service. We make it easy. You just provide us a PFX file. And that automatically selects what my subject name is and the Federation service name, which is determined by the host. And subsequently, I just mentioned, we can add one or more servers and deploy that all in one go, to quickly show that. And since we are the credentials that we supplied is already valid, we actually go and validate and say, OK, hey, we can control that machine. That's good. All right, let's keep adding more. So I'm going to add one more. So as you can see out here, it essentially popped up in this case. So this is PS. Let's hope this works. Looks like I've got a credential. Do you know what, remember what the?
Password one.
Pass at
word.
All right, there you go. So now you saw both the experiences in terms of when we actually do the pop-up when we don't have access out there. And similarly, now what we're also doing here is not only setting up the ADFS Federation services, we're also setting up the machines that you need to set up in the DMZ for extended access. A very important question out here that we've seen a lot of people say is that, oh, I'm only trying to set up intranet access. I don't need anything on the extranet. Unfortunately, the way Exchange Active Sync and Outlook authentication currently work is that the credentials are passed up to Exchange Online, and Exchange Online proxies the authentication back to on-premises. And to make that work, you need something that's accessible over the internet. And we have a role called the Web Application Proxy that serves as a proxy for the authentication request for ADFS when accessing from the internet. So same things, I can set one or more. In this case, I'll just set up one. Add that. And now, subsequently, the way we set up the aspect of the web application proxy is that we install the machine and we configure the role, and it actually connects back to the ADFS Federation server. So this is an account which has to be an ADFS Federation admin. It's the same account for me. So ADFS is typically people employ. Yes, we have a question there. By the way, do we have any mics around for questions? All right, keep going while we find some mics. Sorry, could you repeat that? We're also getting the mic as well. I kind of heard a there's more words that kind of became clearer as I go.
So when I have no web proxy from Microsoft use as IRR, so when I use CAMP or F5 LoadMaster as ADFS proxy, how can I configure that in this tool?
So so what I, please let me know if I got that right. I think this is about how do you think about application proxy versus the authentication proxy and the web application proxy. Was that the question?
Yes.
To configure. So the way it works is that the web application proxy in Windows Server 2012 R2 handles both authentication and application requests to do that. Now they're all on different namespaces. When you set up the web application proxy, you always need an ADFS server, and we will automatically establish the namespaces. When you saw me add the SSL account out there, there was an fs.contoso.com. That becomes your authentication proxy host header that you will essentially use for where your DNS will point to the load balancer, and the load balancer for that will target the machines. Now, similarly, you might have an app1.contoso.com that you're exposing through the web application proxy and protected by ADFS as well. In that case, it's again, the DNS points to the load balancer, and the load balancer knows how to distribute that across the web application. All right. Okay, let's keep going. Now, when you deploy Active Directory Federation service across many nodes, we have the notion you have to run them under a common service account. The key, it's not very, it's pretty much the same as any multi-node web server, for example, all right? So typically, people can use a standard service account, and which is a username and a password, and they might have a complex password that doesn't expire or may expire, and will have to kind of keep changing the password associated with the service account. Now, that may turn to be cumbersome. If, for example, if I forget the password, I essentially have the entire service stop as a result of it because it can't authenticate anymore. So one of the key features that we added in Windows Server 2012 was the support for something called Group Managed Service Accounts, and now ADFS uses that. What Group Managed Service Accounts does is that on setup, we essentially have this common special account for that service, which each computer is attached to. And that's all managed by Active Directory itself, where when the computers change passwords, these keys, secret keys, also get rolled over. But the end benefit is that I don't have to worry about my passwords anymore. So this is the simplest option for in terms of we give you that option if we detect a 2012 DC in the environment, and that will just create
wrong mouse.
It's the wrong mouse. And excuse me. And we'll just create that for you. This page is about what was something that was actually challenging earlier, because what I had to do before was I had to download yet another tool called Azure AD PowerShell, set it up on the box, and then go and set up the federation trust relationship between Azure Active Directory and ADFS. Now, what it means is that ADFS accepts the notion of saying that you're giving permissions in ADFS to say, I am okay to issue tokens to Azure Active Directory. And similarly, it's the other side of the trust relationship where Azure Active Directory says, I can consume tokens from Active Directory Federation service. So we make that process really simple, again, wrong mouse, where we can take care of all of this for you. And it's all integrated. It's as simple as that. Now, one aspect, and this comes back to the standard installation review summary options that you typically see. A couple of things that I want, just one aspect that I do want to mention out here is that about 4 or 5 months ago, we started supporting password sync in combination with Federation. Now, why, you may ask? Because it's both our sync options, and I'll go into more details. What this offers is the ability where, in the event of perhaps your data center going down, you can fall back to the same passwords as your Active Directory has, and that gives you the ability to have an easy failover mechanism and reduce the impact of your business continuity. So that gives you a simpler, even in some cases, it's a simpler HA solution as well for you. I think we're going through a bunch of aspects of this.
Looks like we have
a credential problem within the environment. So I'm just going to stop out there and essentially focus on what would have happened out there. Essentially, was we would have gone through the installation. One additional aspect also that we do is that we have a validation step out there to be able to kind of work our way where we can check your DNS entries, we can do a transaction to kind of make sure everything was set up, and then we call it done, saying you're done at that point in time. So, should we switch over? So now we're going to start diving in. Now that you've seen a little bit of the tool to understand the experience, we're going to start diving in a little more details, and over to Andreas.
All right, so that was a connect. That was actually how to actually get my tools deployed. But before I actually did this, there was actually a few things I need to do. So the first thing is IDFix. You probably have heard about it. We've always talked about it in the context of DirSync as well. It's a tool you're running on your on-prem Active Directory and will inspect your Active Directory to see, OK, what is the data quality here? Are there things we have to change and clean up for it to be successfully, for the data to be successfully synchronized up to our Active Directory? Domain verification. We do want to make sure that if you're using contoso.com, for example, you want to verify that before you start the synchronization process. We can't really allow you to just pick any UPN suffix and just say start synchronizing accounts with at Microsoft.com, for example, because in that case, it just wouldn't work. So you want to make sure you do that before you start synchronization.
Sorry.
Yes, there was a question again.
OK, it's a two-part question.
Uh-huh.
If I run the IDFix and it shows me that I've already superseded the amount of objects that is previously allowed, then I would have to talk to Microsoft to increase that quota. Do I still need a separate SQL, or can I go with the standard installation? That's number one. And the second question part of it is, can I isolate a part of the hierarchy in the AD when I'm syncing?
Okay, so there are two questions. So one is about SQL Server, how many objects can I have, basically? So the way to think about this is for the SQL Express that comes out of the box, and actually coming in a few slides, you can have up to 100,000 objects. If you have more than that, you want a full SQL. And the reason is because otherwise you will run out of the SQL Express quota. So 100,000 objects, and you will need a SQL, whether you like it or not, unfortunately. The other question was,
can I isolate a part of the AD hierarchy when I'm syncing so I can limit the number of...
Yeah, so filtering, we'll get to that also. But yes, you can do filtering based on OUs, based on domains, or based on attributes. So yes, that can be done. So subscriptions, let me talk about subscription because this is usually an area for confusion. So when you go and purchase Office 365 with Exchange and Link and all that, you actually get an Office 365 subscription. And you can log into the portaloffice.com, and you can see all your users, etc. And the view from portaloffice.com is actually Azure Active Directory. However, in many cases, you want to go to windows-azure.com because, well, guess what? Microsoft Azure Active Directory, its native location is on the Windows Azure portal. And in that case, guess what? The Office 365 subscription is not the same as an Azure subscription. So if you click on the link, you say, hey, you do not have a subscription. If you run into that problem, there is a magic URL that's on this slide. You just click on that, and it's known as a $0 subscription. It will create an Azure subscription, free of charge, no credit card required. And then you can get into the Azure portal and do the management for Office 365. It's the same URL for everyone, so just copy-paste it and share it with your friends, tweet it, etc. We really want to make sure that as many people as possible know about that link, because it's one of the most common questions I receive. And we already talked about the design decisions. You saw that in the wizard where there was a page, hey, now stop. Which is your source anchor? Which is your UPN information? You want to make sure you have made those decisions before you start the wizard, so you're not running that into halfway to wizard years. Oh my goodness, what am I going to do right now? Because that might take some time to decide. So Azure Active Directory Connect, this is our tool for building that identity bridge slice. We are not trying in any way to go after the classic on-premises. So Forefront Identity Manager is and will remain the on-prem product for the foreseeable future and is still being invested in. We're also not in the Connect going after the right-hand side from the picture where all with all the SaaS applications setting up Federation to Box, Salesforce, et cetera. That is part of Windows Azure. So let us dig more into the sync engine. So the customized path, you've seen that now, and I'm just going to reiterate the configuration that actually was created for us. So it will do a single forest, obviously. I can do just one forest. In my case, I did two. And there's a few configurations that just work for, like the fully mesh, the account resource forest. I can have one or multiple exchange organizations. Right now, only one exchange organization is supported. The exchange team is verifying AD sync with multiple exchange organizations on premises as well. And we also resolve FSPs, which is important for SharePoint, in particular, where you have security groups, security group in one on-prem forest, and FSPs in a different forest. We resolve that and present the membership correctly up to Azure Active Directory. Filtering, which is exactly what we asked for. So we can filter, you've seen that. Passwords, as I said, we do have password synchronization for multiple forests. As well now in Azure Active Sync, you can get that already today. You don't have to wait for Connect to come up to GA. And there's a few assumptions of the configuration we made. You can read that on this slide. So the configuration that actually was created, I actually can look at that. So let us actually go back to the machine. So when we installed the Sync engine, it actually created a folder for us under the covers, and here you have it all under AD sync. Oops, let me just go into the folder here. So everything, all the installation log, you notice that we installed the sync engine and with that all the, everything else. You'll find it all here. So here are all the MSI logs, as well as all the PowerShell scripts that created the configuration. So in AD sync, everything is driven through PowerShell for configuration, and it's not Visual Studio anymore. It actually allows me to take configuration from one machine and copy to other using just PowerShell. So there's no DLLs that's being copied anymore. I also actually can see the configuration now. So I have another tool. We refer to this is a SyncRel editor. We refer to it as a resource kit tool. It is not really the same quality as the rest of the product, but it actually allows me to see the entire configuration which was created. If you install DirtSync, we just give you a bunch of compiled DLLs. Maybe you had no idea what's actually happening under the covers. But now you can actually do this, and you can also make changes. So I'm just going to show you quickly how this is going to work. I still have time for that. So let's say, for example, I want to know if what is the attributes I'm flowing for a particular object type? I can do all this here. So for an enabled user, I can do an edit here, hopefully. There we go. I go into all my attribute flows. And this is all the attributes we're going to flow up to the cloud for an account which we have determined is an enabled account. But can I also do my own configuration here, which was not possible in DirtSync. DirtSync was an appliance. You were actually not allowed to change anything except the alternate ID. Everything else was locked down. And if you tried to make a change, you would lose the configuration change when you move to the next version of DirtSync anyways. But now I can actually do a new rule. And a common scenario is, hey, I want to actually populate the user's location attribute in Azure Active Directory. So user's location attribute is the counter information that the user license. And it's very common that you need to do that. So by default in DirtSync and AD sync, we take MS Exchange usage location attribute. That is usually not populated since it was only introduced in Exchange 2010. So I actually want another attribute. I want a C attribute, which has been in Active Directory forever, to synchronize to that attribute. And by doing that, I actually can now license my users automatically. I don't have to go into portal and in the Office portal select, OK, which country they are located in. So just going to do this quickly, you can see how easy it is to even do the advanced configuration. I'm just going to give this a name, inbound usage location. I'm going to say this is in Active Directory. This is a user. It's going to the person in the metaverse. I'm just going to join. If you know Forefront Identity Manager, you know some of these terms. I want this for all my objects. Again, if you recognize Forefront Identity Manager and declarative provisioning, you will recognize all the terms here. And then I'm going to just add my attribute flow. So my target is the usage location attribute. And I want to source that from the country attribute in my on-prem Active Directory. I'm going to do add. And that's basically it. Now I have changed the configuration. And since I added my own rule, this is completely supported. This configuration will actually stick there. So even when I upgrade to newer versions of the AD Sync, my configuration will be preserved. And again, if I want to see what this actually is, if I really like PowerShell, I can click export. And you will actually get the PowerShell script that actually will create the configuration for that synchronization rule. So this was the configuration. So we have rules. Again, if you know FIM 2010 and declared provisioning, you will recognize that, this is the next generation of declared provisioning. That is the only configuration option we have in the sync engine nowadays. But we'll also do a lot of detection of which version of Exchange, for example, we have. Common problem with DirSync was that if you didn't have Exchange 2013 SP1 schema, it failed to install. Certainly if you enable the hybrid exchange option. But now we actually do that. We detect, OK, which version of Exchange we have, and we'll adjust the configuration automatically. And if you don't have Exchange, we know that, there's pointless to even try to synchronize Exchange attributes from this forest, and we don't do that. So configuration is dynamically created based on what we have found. And the good thing with licensing is this is actually free. So Azure Active Sync, which is available now, and for Connect, is free when it comes from synchronizing from on-prem up to the cloud. It just comes a part of the product, just as DirSync was free. What you are going to need is for premium features is for all the write-back scenarios. So I quickly showed write-back of devices, users, and groups. That will require an Azure Directory premium license. For FIM 2010, if you purchase the EMS, EMS suite, we'll actually get FIM 2010 licenses. But if you want to purchase FIM 2010 and you want to onboard to Azure Active Directory and use FIM 2010, you still need a FIM 2010 license. So for that reason, Azure Active Directory Sync is a lot better since it's free for all your onboarding to Azure Active Directory scenarios. Other things we have changed. So the group size, by default in DirSync, you can only have groups up to 15,000. After that, we stopped synchronizing the group. In AD Sync, we now have 50,000 members in a group. We talked about the size of SQL. We've increased that to 100K since, mainly it's because a new version of SQL Express can actually have twice the size of the database. You can have a lot more filtering. You can filter based on attributes and OUs, et cetera. All that is possible. You saw we can do a lot more for a configuration, and you can actually view the configuration. So a lot of things have been improved over DirSync, since this is a common thing we've heard from many, many customers over the year. And with that, let's talk about federation.
All right. Thanks, Andreas. So let's talk a little bit about sign-in. Now, there are two kind of core sign-in scenarios that we support. One is the ability where we can synchronize the passwords up to Azure Active Directory, which gives you the ability to use the same password as what you have in Azure Active in your on-premises Active Directory, or you can use Federation to sign in. Now, a lot of people ask us, what is our recommendation? The simple answer is that if you can go do password sync, go do that, because A, it is secure. B, it is a simplest deployment option for a customer and for you. And And you don't have to worry about managing a more detailed infrastructure in terms of having multiple servers. Now, there are, however, a few set of reasons why you might go down the federation sign-in portions. Now, we've kind of broken it down into four kind of key areas, where the first one is really about like a bunch around the AD integration. Think about this as your domain join machine having seamless desktop SSO, where you're using a login credential and you just do that. You log into your machine, and then that's pretty much it. And we can go do that. Similarly, Active Directory has a very vast support for like login policies, which includes things like work hours. Now, those are the types of things that, because Active Directory Federation Services just uses Active Directory behind the scenes to actually log in, if you need those types of controls, then it kind of makes sense. Similarly, a few other things that we've added around support is, because I think I mentioned the notion of exposing the authentication endpoints up over to the internet. However, a lot of customers kind of are concerned about exposing usernames and passwords on the internet. Now, what we've done, either for the purposes of worried about attacks worried about denial of service because you already have an AD lockout policy enabled within the enterprise. So what we did was that we've also added in 2012 R2 the ability where you can turn on soft extranet lockout, in which you specify a threshold of bad passwords and an observation window. And if that threshold goes over, the number of bad passwords goes over, we will say, hey, we're stopping accepting authentication requests from the internet. So as a result, the end user, and we'll audit all of goodness, someone can monitor, notify, but at the same point in time, we haven't stopped the end user being able to access an internal resource within that Active Directory. Now, similarly, you may also choose Active Directory Federation Service because I'll talk about password sync in a bit, but you may just have a policy saying that that's just not allowed in terms of being able to sync your passwords to Azure Active Directory. Active Directory Federation Services has, I mentioned, it's a general purpose platform that satisfies many use cases. And from the perspective, we have things where we enable access control policies for enabling access. So we see more and more customers have requirements in terms of access control capabilities. Now, one thing to point out in this area is that we're continuing to make those enhancements in Azure Active Directory as well, so that you can make the right set of access control policies. And the MDM for Office 365 is essentially one aspect of conditional access control that is driven by Azure Active Directory. I'll be talking a bunch about conditional access controls and BYOD in a session tomorrow, which is about AD plus BYOD equals peace of mind, where we'll talk about that in in-depth, including the Office 365 controls and how it works. Finally, you may choose Active Directory Federation Services because we have a vast variety of support for multi-factor authentication, including we have support for inbuilt smart cards, or AD cert authentication, as well as things like MFA systems across a wide variety of vendors, including our own Azure MFA that provides the ability for you to use your phone as a mechanism to log in with an additional factor. We also have other vendors as well, and I'll also be demoing this tomorrow. Now, let's talk about the sign-in of passwords. Now, how does it work? The first thing that I want to make sure that people understand is that Azure Active Directory does not know what that password is, and we don't store it. Now, the way it works is you don't even have to deploy this on any domain controller. We just take what's known as the hash that's already available in Active Directory, and we rehash that and send it securely up to the cloud. And we know in Azure Active Directory when you've done that, hey, the customer is doing this. So as a result, when you log in, we use the same mechanism to make sure that we can compare, do it as many hashes as we essentially do that to compare the hashes and make sure that your login succeeded. So it's not where a system where you have to install an agent, unlike some other vendors. It's not like a system where you have to install agents on every domain controller using the password filter DLL implementation and do that. We do it in a fairly secure way where Azure Active Directory does not know your passwords. And as I mentioned earlier, is that, it also can be a backup for your Federation deployment as well. Because in the event that a data center does go down, you could convert the domain back to managed, and as a result, you would be able to use the same passwords I use in your Active Directory to access a cloud resource. I have a question out there. Sorry, could you repeat that? You just convert, the question was, how do you make the fallback? The way to do that is you just convert the domain back to managed, and once your data center comes back, you can move it back to federated. Currently, the failover times is about 3 hours right now, but by middle of next year, it'll be about 5 minutes. Okay, so a quick way for people to also know as to how does the sign-in with an SSO flow work. Now, there are a couple of points that I wanted to kind of make sure that. Let's assume that the user is accessing the application. It could be a SharePoint or OWA or other rich client applications as well. And I'll talk a little about rich client applications in a short bit. What happens is that the application redirects back to Azure Active Directory. Now, the important thing out here is even in the Federation case, for those of you using, you have to type in your user principal name. What we do in Azure Active Directory is to say, hey, we've got millions of tenants. We need to know which tenant you are so that we can redirect the sign-in request to the appropriate Active Directory Federation server or service for that tenant. So when you type in, like I type in Samuel D at ntdev.microsoft.com, which is my UPN, and as a result, I'm redirected back to our corporate MSIT ADFS servers. Now, that redirection happens. Now, if you're inside the network, your DNS points to your internal ADFS servers. So as a result, if I'm sitting on a domain join machine and our default configuration for the intranet is Windows Integrated Authentication, you just seamlessly logged in using your logged in context. And then once you're logged in, we issue a token back saying that, hey, ADFS issues a token to Azure Active Directory and says, okay, this is the user, this is the immutable ID. We contain some claims in terms of the immutable ID as well as the UPN. And Azure Active Directory now validates that token and makes sure, okay, is that Active Directory Federation service trust still enabled? Yes, because we signed the token with a unique signature that Azure Active Directory knows about. B, is the user still valid in our system? C, essentially, let's do the match based on the UPN and the mutable ID to make sure it is the same user that we're talking about. Once that's done, essentially, you have a token that's sent back to the application, and the application consumes that token and allows access to the resource. Now, what happens when we move to the extranet? Now, it's a very similar process. User access to the application. It gets redirected to Azure AD. You provide your login ID to make sure that we know where do we need to do the sign-in, whether at Azure Active Directory or at the customer's own ADFS server. Now, what happens out here is that because I'm on the extranet, the DNS for that same service, fs.contoso.com, essentially points to my web application proxy servers that are internet-facing. So, as a result, it's because we don't have access to a DC, what you will see likely is by default, we enable username and password authentication on the extranet. But you might have enabled certificate authentication, you might have enabled multi-factor authentication. Those are all aspects that you can control with an Active Directory Federation service. And once I sign in, it's exactly the same process. I am redirected back to AAD and subsequently access the application. Now, I wanted to focus on a few areas of things in terms of, based on what we've heard from customers, on what are the kinds of things to kind of watch out for when you're deploying Active Directory Federation service. Now, Of course, we've made significant enhancements in Windows Server 2012 R2. So that is our current recommendation, is that use Windows Server 2012 R2 for any new installation. If you're on an older version, move up, because you get benefits like the extranet lockout that we've enabled based on custom IaaS for us. Now, similarly, a key aspect that we did is we, in 2012 R2, we removed the need for IIS. And the reason why we did that is manyfold. But one of the reasons is that we wanted to make sure that people felt comfortable installing the Active Directory Federation server on and co-located with a domain controller. Because it's just another authentication service. It controls the keys essentially to like access, like key resources, your business resources. Now, also from a deployment perspective, ADFS has two modes in which we store configuration. One mode is essentially where we use the internal SQL database that's offered to Windows components. And the other mode is that we offer the ability to use a distinct SQL instance to do that. One of the challenges that we saw was that somewhere people would had a large number of users, and as a result, they would have to kind of go to SQL, because we only supported in prior versions only 5 instances of ADFS when you're using the WID mode. Well, but with 2012 R2, we've increased that count to 10. And if you are just using it for Office 365 or the resources protected by Azure Active Directory, that essentially implies that you can support just NoSQL with about 90 to 100,000 users with some buffer added in for failover nodes that's been added in. Same thing. Now, a core aspect, Active Directory Federation, I mentioned within the flow, is that we sign the request with a what's called a token signing certificate. We offer the capability of either you can use a self-signed token certificate that's totally managed by the ADFS service, you don't have to worry about it at all, or you can provide a third-party token signing certificate for that purpose as well. Now, people ask, oh, should I be using a third-party? For us, our recommendation is just use a self-sign. We manage it, we roll it over, we have a service in the cloud that can also reach the Federation metadata endpoint and make sure it's updated so that there's no loss of service as we do the rollover capabilities and establish the key hygiene. Now, from a networking perspective, we have a few things. Of course, I mentioned install the web application proxy server, because your base, your mail client access requires authentication to flow from the outside of the network. So as a result, you need that. Similarly, the Federation metadata endpoint gets exposed, which contains some aspects of metadata information that is public, so that we actually make use of in Azure Active Directory to reach out and say, okay, is that your token signing certificate? If it's going to change, I'm also going to make sure that I update my configuration, because it's an SSL endpoint that we trust and have established initially. Now, one of the things in 2012 R2 is that we use server name indication, or SNI. Now, we've also seen customers have some issues with respect to load balancers that don't support SNI, especially when configuring health probes. So what we've already added is some recommendation for at least a couple of load balancers on how do you configure the load balancer to do SNI, because most newer versions support that, as well as we've introduced as part of a August fix, a roll-up, a new endpoint, an HTTP endpoint that's targeted purely for doing health probes for load balancers and removing SNI out of the equation. Finally, around security, is that I mentioned enable extranet lockout, especially if you're doing that. It gives you better protection when you're using usernames and passwords. And similarly, we recommend always, we have a vast support for like access control policies and conditional access, both based on location awareness, based on multi-factor capabilities, enable that in terms of evaluate how you think about that security. You might want to say all extranet access requires MFA, as an example, or you might want to make that more conditional in nature. We have a bunch of support associated with that. Finally, from a sign-in experience perspective, there are a couple of things that I wanted to point out. These are all based on type of feedback that we get from customers, is that when I mentioned if I'm sitting on the corporate network and I'm on a domain join machine, I get this seamless access using my login credential. To make that work, we need a couple of things. A is that the service principal name of your EDFS service account needs to have the appropriate SPN associated for that service. If we do that on installation, but sometimes you may not have the appropriate privileges to set that. As a result, we kind of keep moving, and you may have to go reset that. That's one thing to check for. Another thing that you will see in 2012R2 is the sign-in experiences are fully mobile-friendly. They have with responsive design, and it's extremely simple for you to add your illustration image for your organization and the brand logo. It's through PowerShell. It's a couple of PowerShell commandlets that you would set up. This gives you a seamless experience. With Azure AD Premium, you would have had the same type of branding experience where your end users get used to a common login experience associated with your company. Finally, we also added a functional capability of Keep Me Signed In, which enables you to provide the ability to say, end users can say, keep me signed in because it's their machine. Let's say it's a home machine. And so they all feel comfortable in terms of staying signed in. And you can enable this. It's not enabled by default. So I think we're nearly out of time. So back to Andreas. Oops, I moved.
Yeah, so we are correct. We're asking to wrap this up. So yes, there is a future. So a bunch of things is coming if you compare to AD Sync or today. And I talked about most of these already, and you've seen it. DirectX Sense is probably one of the things I have not talked about. That actually allows you to extend Azure Active Directory schema with your own attributes and synchronize those as well. That's one thing we're working on right now and is coming as well. And finally, one thing to notice is what we call quarantine objects. Today, if you have user principal name or proxy address as duplicate of another, that object will not be synchronized. In the future, in a couple of months, we'll start to synchronize those, and you will instead see that as an error in the cloud, and we can clean it up later.
One more thing is that with the Windows Server 10 preview, we've also added support for LDAP directory authentication within ADFS as well. So now, within that tool, you can essentially connect up both synchronize as well as sign in with ADFS if you need to connect up to Office 365 or Azure Active Directory.
And with that, let us just go through the standard slides. So here's all the related content. Sam, you have a session tomorrow, as you can see here. And guess what? Here's a bunch of other resources.
So we are going to be at the Ask the Experts for sure. Please stop by. Any questions around Active Directory identity, Server Active Directory, Azure Active Directory. We have a fairly large team that's out here to answer any questions.
Right, so thank you. Start evaluate your, right. Don't forget to evaluate. And we will be in the corner taking questions. Yes.